Affiliates Head On with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute. Mark. Affiliates Head On with Bob Kincaid in 12 seconds. Mark.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Oh, finally Monday. Big snow outside. Great to have you on board this Monday evening. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's the night little dust-up we call Head On. And it's been a busy little day, hasn't it? Dear Leader went off to Philadelphia. Sorry, that's what my Pittsburgh buddies used to call it. Made the third in his trilogy of the same speech over and over and over again about the failure in Iraq. And what a speech it was. Now, the first thing you have to do with any Dear Leader speech is the word count. And this is almost a Christmas carol. If I'd had a little bit more time and somebody who could actually carry a tune, we could have had a parody piece out of this. Let's see, we got three struggles, we got nine liberties, nine terror, one terrorist, 22 terrorists, two mentions of September, 19 mentions of freedom, and 15 mentions of war. So, let's see, out of this, 22 terrorists win, followed up by freedom, placing, and war with 15 was a show. Those of you who had that trifecta, please report to the betting counter. Thank you. Now, John Murtha was in Philadelphia today. He'd better be careful, or some Homeland Security goon's going to accuse him of stalking George Bush. But, and I've got tons of sound for you from Dear Leader's speech. It really was a beauty. It was the same thing, yes. But today, I don't know. Annapolis, not so far from Washington, D.C. That's where he delivered the first one. Then, the Council on Foreign Relations, well, that's right there next to home, so no big deal. But they had to travel him today to Philadelphia, and he went off the reservation and answered questions from, do you see the quote marks, typical Americans in the room, and had himself a Jim Dandy little time of it. And along the way, proved that you got to either get him pilled up or liquored up or whatever if you want to take him on the road. So we've got all of that for you. Might as well jump into it too. Let's see here. Let me look at the list. Yeah. From some of his smart alecky portions of the speech, he's pilled up or whatever, and lets a little bit of the truth shine through.
I'll repeat the question. If I don't like it, I'll make it up.
And did you hear all the good Americans laughing? Yeah. If I don't like it, I'll make it up. And then he went on to explain, and this is just a dandy, he went on to explain that he was just showing off.
Democracies yield the peace. That's what history has shown us. That's what I tried to say in my peroration in this speech.
Peroration.
It's a long word. I'm doing it for the Senator Specter here. Just showing off, Senator. Just trying to look good in front of the folks here.
Yeah. Look good in front of the folks. Quit opposing my judicial nominees, or we'll put you in a dog cage and send you to Guantanamo, baby. That's what that was about. Did you notice the word, though? Peroration. Peroration. Now, either he's got the hots for that woman that says she's going to run against Hillary Clinton for her senator seat, Jean Pirro, or he is so drugged, what, that he cannot pronounce the word, careful here, peroration. Now, I realize I'm talking to intelligent people. I'm talking to liberals. I'm talking to Democrats. I'm talking to progressives, decent human beings with most of their brains still intact and not burned up with, booze and coke. But still, let's check it out. Had to go and check the definition. Peroration, the conclusion of a speech with a formal recapitulation. Or to speak at great length, often in grandiloquent matter, to declaim. I don't think you could accuse George of speaking in a grandiloquent manner or declaiming. It is also defined as, quote, a flowery and highly rhetorical oration, or, and I think this was what he was getting at, the concluding section of an oration, used in the sentence, he summarized his main points in his peroration. But no, it's something in Dear Leader's mind, it probably has something to do with ballet. Peroration, pirouette. Peroration. What a clown. Does he, or is this some sort of code? I don't know. Is this that folksy sort of, aw shucks, I can't speak English just like the rest of y'all right-wing idiots can't speak English neither. We's all just rednecks in this together. Is that what it is? Is it a sort of happy little insult to the intelligence, sort of on the level of what Larry the Cable Guy does? I don't care who you are, that's funny. Yuck. So, yeah, he was a bit of a smart aleck and tried to show off his fancy new word, what Karl Rove done teacher-rated him. Didn't quite work out. There's a lot more to come when we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready, The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards. But will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
So, in his little speech in Philadelphia today, on the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. Dear Leader tried desperately to lay out what it was that he hoped the Iraqi people would achieve. And along the way, and this is scripted, okay? The question and answer was lightly rehearsed, but allegedly off the cuff. But the main part of the body of the speech, for God's sakes, was written in advance. I mean, the words, you know, we've got all the right words now. All we've got to do, dear leaders, get them in the right order, that kind of thing. And he said that he was trying to lay out the idea that there were 4 things that he wanted the Iraqi people to accomplish. Now, I want you to hear this butchery.
Iraqis still have more difficult work ahead, and our coalition and the new Iraqi government will face many challenges, including in 4 critical areas. Ensuring Iraqi security, forming an inclusive Iraqi government, encouraging Iraqi reconciliation, and maintaining Iraqi democracy in a tough neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a neighborhood. It's a neighborhood. It's not a region of the world, it's a neighborhood. But did you hear that? Including 4 critical errors. Now, I trip over my tongue all the time. I'm extemporizing. This is ad-libbed for the most part. I don't sit and script it all out minute by minute for 3 solid hours like Flush Flemball does. This is, from my mouth to your ear. But I understand that sometimes as you read along, it can get difficult. But what I have to ask and what I have to wonder is when he says four critical errors. Now, I'll play some other things for you through the course of the evening that sort of tie this all together. This guy knows he is on a sinking ship. All right? He really, really does know he's going down in flames. And Iraq is going to be a disaster of his creation. And while I don't generally go in for Freudian psychoanalysis and all that id, ego, and superego, and why do you hate your mother, and my, you know, all that Oedipal stuff. I think there is some truth to the idea of the Freudian slip. That wasn't a ha-ha screw-up on his part. That was an aha screw-up on his part. He knows. He knows he is the worst president ever. Thanks, Mark Cop. He knows. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on. How was your weekend?
Fine. Yours?
Very good, thank you.
Well, I wish he'd realize that he's the worst president we've had, but he probably doesn't believe that.
I think he knows it. How could you not be so overwhelmed and not realize it at some dark night of the soul kind of moment?
I don't know. Maybe he just did too much nose candy. Maybe he just doesn't care. I don't know. But you know, he and Arnold Schwarzenegger basically are the mirror image of the society that put them in office.
Well, indeed.
And, I mean, you know, with Schwarzenegger, for example, now he did not vote to commute that man's sentence to life imprisonment because 68% of the people in California do support the death penalty. And Arnold would be hurting himself with his conservative base. I mean, he's already in trouble with them out there anyway.
Well, he was between Scylla and Charybdis on this one.
Well, you know, I think he could have simply stayed the order and commuted to life in prison. And I don't think that would have hurt him. And he really could have gained more support by doing that than he thinks that he's going to gain by go ahead and putting needles in this man's veins. I mean, I don't know Mr. Williams, and I don't know anything about the crime he committed. However, I am not a believer in the death penalty. I mean, any research that I've ever seen indicates that it does not prevent or it does not serve as a deterrent for capital crimes.
Not in civilized society, it doesn't.
Well, I mean, I don't think in state by state, they've done analyses of whether or not they thought it was an effective tool to prevent people from committing capital crimes, and they said that it doesn't. Now, maybe I'm wrong there.
No, I don't think you are. When I said not in civilized society, though, I mean that very specifically.
I understand.
It probably did. When every crime, if you look back to merry old England, for instance, when every crime was a capital crime, when a felony, you know, whether it be larceny or arson or whatever, or rape or murder, when they were all capital crimes and you died, I would imagine that then it probably did have a deterrent effect.
Well, I mean, you know, back then, if a child stole a loaf of bread, the hangman, if the child's weight was not enough to strangle him, would grab the child by the feet.
Right. I mean, we're not talking about the high water mark of Western civilization.
In merry old England, I mean, it wasn't an uncommon sight to enter the gate of a city to see somebody's head stuck on a pike.
Sure. Right. It was deliberately done.
Exactly. I mean, you know, this is exactly how this is a message that they wanted to get across to people, and I'm glad I didn't live back then.
And, well, but some forebear of yours did and managed to stay, you know, on the right side of the law, so
well,
congratulations to them.
But one more thing, as far as Bush is concerned, going back to him, you know, the man's speech is atrocious, and basically what his problem is, he's just too lazy. You know, it takes a certain amount of effort to speak correctly and to enunciate properly.
Yeah, and a little dose of give a damn.
And you can slur your words and you can mispronounce words, but I mean, there is no reason that a person who has his background in education and at least would have access to a pronouncing gazetteer or people who could, you know, help him with his speech
Well, that's
why reason for him to speak the way.
Well, that's why I wonder if it's some sort of redneck cornpone code. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, you know, that might be true, but when I was just finishing up FDR's Fireside Chats, it's a book that has all of them in there. And, of course, I've read a lot of the speeches of John Kennedy. And when I compare FDR and JFK to this ignorant redneck in the White House, it is absolutely nauseating.
Well, yes, it is. It's nauseating if you compare him to Jimmy Carter, to Bill Clinton. God knows it's nauseating if you compare him to Ronald Reagan.
Now, Jimmy Carter had an accent, so I think you could cut it with a knife.
Sure.
And Bill Clinton, of course, could, you know, he could speak old boy, too.
And what I'm saying is this is not a blanket condemnation of the Southern dialect.
No, it's not. It's simply a matter of if you're going to speak, at least have enough energy and enough pride in your speech. And I've gotten on people like Jeff about the way they talk. And you've heard me do it.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're going to get in a public place and talk, then don't make a fool of yourself. And this man is making a fool not only of himself, but, in my opinion, the whole country. But, of course, like I say, if, in fact, he isn't the mirror image of the society that put him there, maybe they take great pleasure in hearing him be one of them good old boys sitting around the...
Precisely, Jim, precisely.
The pot-bellied stove with a big chaw of tobacco in one side and snuff in the other.
Jim, this is
gum. I don't know.
No, this is you're exactly right. You've hit it on the head. This is a nation that has been by hook or by crook, and I submit to you, crook, has been taught to treasure ignorance. You know, there was a day when America was the can-do nation, when if it had to be invented, by golly, we could invent it. And there were Bells and Edisons and, well, the list goes on. And America fueled the Industrial Revolution and the rise of the middle class based on innovation and a desire to make things better. That day is gone. That day is dead. My thesis is that it has been supplanted by a society that is urged to take things on faith instead of knowledge.
Well,
and George Bush is what it has gotten us.
And give me a little time here. Something is a point I want to make, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Spare me. And don't roll me over yet, okay? When you look at some of the icons, cultural icons, to whom our youth are devoted, I mean, you've got Dr. Dre, Ice-T, Snoop Doggy Dogg, and you've got some of the others, okay? You've got that whole that whole hip-hop thing, which encourages not only murder, mayhem, and violence, but also, I mean, are these people exactly lexicons of the King's English? I don't think so.
No, and neither is Larry the Cable Guy or Jeff Foxworthy.
Get her done.
Or any of the cracker side of that continuum.
I mean, it's getting to the point now that if a child in school probably who is conscious about his speech and tries to speak correctly and not use jargon and slang or the latest whatever words they use, he's probably ostracized and condemned and called names.
I can speak from real experience, Jim. We try very hard to teach our children to speak properly, because while we, you know, the Appalachian dialect is a real treasure, but you've got to be able to speak so-called flat English so that the rest of the world won't turn its nose up at you. And so our children try to speak good English at school, and yes, you're absolutely right, they are ridiculed for it.
Well, you know, there it is, and there you have it, and that's exactly what this country is going to. You know, when, you know, you start debasing your coinage, when you start basically sending all your blood and treasure overseas, and you become a debtor nation, and you lose pride in your language. For example, this happened in Rome. you know, Rome, the type of Latin they spoke went from the type of church Latin to Ulpian Latin. It was Latin of the street.
Well, even church Latin is the Vulgate. Even church Latin is a cheesed-up, dumbed-down version of Latin. The Latin that I was taught was almost unintelligible as compared to the stuff in the Vulgate. It's the same thing with Greek. The Koine Greek of the New Testament is gutter Greek.
Well, basically, when you start speaking argot or just guttural or a transmogrified version of your own native tongue, to me that is an indication of decline and fall, and that's exactly where we're headed. I wish, you know, Bush is headed down the tubes. But, you know, this guy's, I think he's trying to take the whole country away with him. And they're willing to go with him, too.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's exactly why I said what I did about, you know, when we've lost our status as the grand innovator of the world. Bill Gates announced 3,000 new jobs in India. He's in India because that's where innovation is taking place.
Well, these people are well-spoken, and they are smart, and they are assiduous, and they are on top of their game, and they are leaving us behind. That's all I can say.
You're absolutely right. And
that's right behind. We're not even out of the starting gate before they're halfway around the course.
Right, and we want it that way. We got to hit it, Jim. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Take care. And a quick break when we come back. Maybe a few more thoughts along those lines. Jim hit a lot of high points. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Warm out today. Warm yesterday. Even warmer today. Met her on my CB. Said her name was Mimi. Sounded like an angel come to earth. When I went to meet her, man, you should have seen her. Twice as tall as me, three times the girl.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Yeah.
Now, I need to make it clear. Oh, by the way, this is Head On. I'm Bob. And the phone number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I need to make it clear, and I hope I did, and if I didn't, let me try again. There is a world of difference between dialect and accent and just bum usage of the language. I've heard a number of linguistic scholars say that the dialect that you hear here in the Appalachians, in West Virginia, Western Virginia, Eastern Tennessee, Western North Carolina, that the dialect you hear here, you might be surprised if you could build that time machine that I so desperately want. If you could build that thing and go back and listen to, say, what was his name? Burbridge? The great Shakespearean actor of Shakespeare's day, or Shakespeare himself. If you could hear them speak, you would be, well, you know, the average newscaster, the average babbling head on Fox would be appalled to hear them, because it would sound like they were listening to a bunch of freaking hillbillies. Because this geographic section, by virtue of its isolation, is sort of a time capsule for the Elizabethan English of our forebears. That's why that's why you can read Shakespeare if you're from around here and go, I use that word, when the rest of the world says, what's that? Our pal Judy down at Coal River Mountain Watch sent me an article last week that was that very matter on point. So let's draw a line, or some level of distinction, between saying, well, that guy's got a southern accent. I mean, Jim's right. Jimmy Carter had a southern accent you could cut with a knife. And it was beautiful. And there's a beauty to the accent of the Mainer, or the Southie from Boston. There's a beauty to that accent you get when you call to order a sweater from Land's End and you get, thank you for calling Land's End, have a lovely, you know, That upper Midwestern thing. It's gorgeous. Now, there is a profound distinction between all of that and being deliberately stupid, or, as Mike Wallace described him, incurious. Incurious is a good word to describe dear leader's disaffection for whatever passed for learning. He just wasn't interested in anything. Once he got past branding pledges and grew out of, arguably, sticking M-80s up frogs' butts, lighting them and throwing them up in the air, that was the end of his curiosity. They've probably, if you get right down to it, Andy Card or Karen Hughes or Harriet Myers, or maybe even Laura, for God's sake, she was a librarian. Somewhere along the way, I'm sure someone has repeatedly told Dear Leader that the word is nuclear. And his stubborn fixation with nuclear, that's not a dialect. That's not a regionalism. That is stubbornness, and that is ignorance. So I hope we're clear on that. Let's go to the phones. Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
I just want to explain something before
okie dokie.
Go into what I'm doing. A lot of times I'll call and I do, let's just say, something funny. Satire, because one of the reasons I think I do that is, a lot of times if you just confront a conservative with, let's just call them facts, they will listen to that and they will go, oh yeah, they're just talking up liberal nonsense, blah blah blah. But if like John Stewart does, if you can make them laugh,
you can make it stick.
You can make it stick. They wake up and they go, hey, wait a minute, what did he say? And you can make it stick. I found that with people I know that are conservative. You know, if you can make them laugh about something, then they may actually listen.
Mm-hmm.
So bearing that in mind, I'd like to tell you about the new movie by Peter Jackson.
Okay.
Have you seen this?
No.
Okay, good. It's called Falafel. The Rise and Fall of the Boy King. It's a film about a creature discovered on the fringes of tabloid television by an eccentric Australian billionaire and thrust into stardom by promoting the new Nazi rhetoric of neoconservatism. Now, Bill O'Reilly stars as Falafel, the Boy King. Rupert Murdoch as the eccentric Australian billionaire.
Bloody well right.
Right. Patricia Heaton is a falafel cook from the wrong side of the tracks. And this one's for you. Ann Coulter is a gender-confused teamster. Bruce Willis is the investigating officer, and Michelle Malkin is the falafel dominatrix.
Falafel with a whip.
Yeah. Got the recipe tattooed.
Tattooed on the back of her neck.
Okay. But now let's move to something more serious.
Okay.
Arnold could actually say that through his film career, he's actually killed someone now.
That's true, and leave their women weeping.
Freak it.
Well, I guess what? Tukey's in the middle of his last meal, isn't he?
Yeah.
About now,
yeah.
And they'll crucify him in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, don't use that figuratively. I mean, he's going to be laying there on the gurney with the arm stretched out. He's going to get crucified.
Well, you know, Germans used to fall all over themselves to kill black people.
Well, so did people in your neck of the woods, brother.
But they still do.
Well, that too.
You know, they drag them from behind pickup trucks.
Well, you know, I go over to Democratic Underground periodically and look in, Chris, and I've been amazed because there has been an absolute frenzy of kill Tukey. Now, I'm not going to pass on his guilt or innocence. He is convicted of having slain, I believe, a convenience store owner, and then in the lobby of a motel, a father, his wife, and their child. You cannot get any worse than that in my book. Killing, for me, it's like... What's that verse that Dear Leader quoted from the Quran? I believe it was Surah 5, verse 132 or 32, whatever, where it says, if you kill one, it's like killing the whole world.
Is that like bombing a factory that makes milk for babies?
Maybe a little bit, yeah, could be.
Oh, okay.
But the whole, you know, whether Tukey killed one, four, or 4,000, we can only take his life once.
Well, I saw that there had been over, about 110,000 civilians that have been killed so far in Iraq.
Well, Dear Leader, I've got that. Dear Leader said today, 30,000, give or take a few. He actually said that, more or less, give or take. He said that.
Give or take.
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah, it was one of those run screaming around the studio moments. Hey, Agnes, you got to hear this.
Oh, there's one more thing. I remembered I wrote this. I've been writing so much lately because I'm mad. King George III had a press conference the other day. You want to know what he said? What
did he say?
These insurgents will not dissuade us from our mission in the Americas. He's also stated that the good citizens of America believe in monarchy, and they will not allow these religious zealots to stop the march of totalitarianism. So that's what he said in the press conference.
Well, you know, you... I know, oh God. There are parallels between him and the madness of King George that have not even been explored yet. Perhaps our buddy Stephen in England could extrapolate on that better. He's probably
love to hear from him.
Probably a little tighter on the history there than we are. But backing up to Tukey just for a minute, let's get one thing clear. You and me, we're white people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we cannot step into his shoes. That doesn't excuse what he did.
No.
But it also does not, we're also not able to view this through the eyes of those who will see this as just another damn lynching.
Yeah.
And it is, whether you're using a needle and some, you know, a little sodium pentothal, a little of this, a little of that, it's a lynching, okay?
And however educated it is, it's still blood.
Yeah. And it's still death, and it's still done in the name of the people of the state of California. When it's done in Alabama, it's done in your name. I'm proud to live in a state that is civilized enough that we don't engage in it. And yet, you know, here it is coming up on, it's mid-December, and toward the end of January, our legislature will sit, and we've got a freak from the eastern panhandle of West Virginia who will once again introduce his bill to reinstate the death penalty in West Virginia. And I think this guy probably probably puts blood on his breakfast cereal.
You said earlier, talking about West Virginia, by virtue of seclusion?
Yeah, isolation, seclusion.
By virtue of isolation, that is a virtue. It really is.
Well, I think in many ways it has turned out to be one.
It really is.
Now, it's a virtue because we have been left to ourselves in large part. Until the Great Society came along and the Appalachian Regional Commission, nobody gave a damn about the poverty in this area.
No. And we've got areas around towards the southern middle of this state, Alabama, that are so poor, it boggles the mind. But
yeah.
Who cares, right?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, as long as Dear Leader's not going there to deliver a speech or anything.
Well, you know, Auburn University went down there and they actually built these people some houses. They didn't build them just normal houses. They went and they architecture students. They experimented, and they used recycled products. They built them hay bale houses. They built them houses, you know, where they fill the tires. And it's a really fine structured house.
There's some fascinating. The same thing was done with a TVA project, I believe, in Tennessee. It's documented in the wonderful documentary Kilowatt Hours, O-U-R-S, not H-O-U-R-S.
It's great that that is done. But once you build the house and you leave, There's no...
Well, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, there's no economic... I get so mad, I can't talk.
I know.
But they have a fine house to live in now, but the area's so poor. What are they going to do?
They're going to stay right there in their little house and hopefully not go out in public.
It's the same difference as working all day in a mine and shopping at the company store and coming home and saying, well, honey, we survived another day.
And, you know, what's the old line from the Pink Floyd song? And from it comes from a philosopher, of course, but hanging on in quiet desperation. Or
hanging on in quiet desperation.
Yeah, and that comes from the line, or comes from Hobbes, Locke, one of those guys who said, most men lead lives of quiet desperation.
Yeah. Well, another thing was the other day, two prominent people died. One was a philosopher, a great orator. The other one is in politics.
Yeah, Eugene McCarthy and Richard Pryor, sure.
Yeah. I don't know why people don't see some of these comedians as philosophers. I never considered Lenny Bruce as a comedian.
No.
No, he was a...
Well, and Mark Twain was certainly not just a humorist or a comedian. With most comedians, there's a hell of a lot of pain that goes into being funny.
That's why they're good actors.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pain in this world, but you got to find a way to live with it. I mean, you can sit and gripe all day long about things, but unless you're willing to actually do something, try to do something to change it, then... Anyway.
No, I know. We got to hit it, though, brother.
On the massivereport.blogspot.com, I now have a link to Head On Radio and White Rose Society if you go there.
Well, bless your heart. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Take care.
All right.
Good talking to you. So we should probably catch a quick break. And I guess it would probably be beneficial to talk a little bit about the Tukey Williams thing. It's more racism. There's no getting around the fact that the death penalty in this country is enforced on racial lines. And as long as it is, it's wrong. You know, until people like Randy Duke Cunningham are facing capital punishment for what they do, then everything else is pure hypocrisy, isn't it? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
We're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. Anything at all, so why don't you smile?
Now, I get, like I said, I guess we should at least, because we haven't done a whole lot of talking about it, say a few words about what's going on with the Stanley Williams thing, Stanley Williams execution, the state-sponsored murder of Stanley Williams. And I was, like I said, I was frankly surprised to see some of the discussion that was taking place on an ostensibly liberal site like Democratic Underground. Of folks saying, oh, kill him now, kill him quick. Because I don't get it. I don't know how you can be liberal or progressive or anything like that and think that bumping off somebody is in any wise enlightened or advanced. Let's see. France, nope, guillotines out of commission. Britain, nope, sorry, doesn't do it anymore. Germany, not even Germany, who did it, you know, by the millions. They don't do it anymore. The entire civilized world does not do capital punishment anymore. China does. Iran does. Syria does. God knows our best friends, the Saudi Arabians, do. You can almost hear Bandar Bush telling George, well, you do not need to worry about the execution. It works very well for us. I guess that's kind of an Indian accent. I apologize. But yeah, we're in line with the third world nations, and maybe that's because that's what we're trying desperately to become. Maybe that's what it boils down to. Jim had another thought. Let's go back to Jim. Hey, Jim.
Well, you know, I think that's exactly what we've become. And what I wanted to say is this, in reference to what Mr. Bush or any of those other people say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to say it, but I just don't believe any of them. I just really have a hard time in believing anything that he says or that comes out of the mouths of any of his appointees or people speaking in his name.
Well, that's very, very well brought up, Jim, because he acknowledged that today in his speech when he was taking questions. At one point he said, you know, I tell you that these terrorists want to form an empire that stretches from Spain to Malaysia. And he says, and, you know, people say, oh, he's just making that up. And he says, no, this is what they've said they want to do. But he, in that very little phrase, no, he's just making it up. He knows that most of America does not believe a damn word that comes out of his mouth.
Well, you know, what really blows my mind is when they start denying things, you know. That's when they really get into their best element.
Like, we don't do torture?
Yeah, and other things as well. And, you know, I was reading John Wheeler Bennett's book, The Nimbus of Power, Chapter 11, page 273. And Bismarck's celebrated remark is that no story is worth believing until it has been officially denied.
Well, I tell you, there's a lot of starch in that.
I think so. And that's one thing I just wanted to add. And, you know, whenever they start denying something, you know, these people, in my opinion, speak anonymically. They speak in anonyms. Whatever they say, I look to the exact opposite and I believe that. And I never thought I would be that way.
Well, I think you're well advised to do so because 9 times out of 10, that proves correct.
Well, that's all I have to say is I just can't believe them anymore. And when they start denying things, I know there's something, you know, there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. In other words, I smell a great big old fat rat.
Yeah, the biggest and the rattiest. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
All right. And, well, it's time for the, man, where does it go? Hour already down. We'll be back after a quick break and a little music. I have no idea what Agnes is going to pick out. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll
be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating. Just very devastating. And the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's continue onward with Dear Leader's speech today. And, you know, I had to sit through that miserable thing. The least I can do is impart just a little bit of the misery to you, too. Sorry. There was a lot of speechifying in this, and as I mentioned, the question and answer session afterward. But there was a statement made, and it's about hearing the little nuances in what he says. It's about hearing the things that you would ordinarily just let slide right by. But if you stop and let them rattle around in your head like a marble in an overhead light fixture, they will make you scream. Try this one on for size.
The second key challenge is forming an inclusive government that protects the interests of all Iraqis and encourages more in the rejectionist camp to abandon violence and embrace politics.
Embrace politics. It'll only take you a minute. Stew on it. And embrace politics. Does he expect the Iraqis to embrace the politics that have been embraced in this country? Will Iraqi politics be like American politics, where if anyone dares question the government, they are screamed down for their efforts? Is it going to be a situation where you've got people like, if someone says, well, you know, I do not think that Prime Minister Alawi is doing such a good job. Is it going to be a matter where, Michael Reagan comes out and says that they should be hung for treason? Is that the politics that George Bush wants the rejectionists to embrace? Is it going to be this kind of politics? Now, this is from Pat Robertson, our dear buddy. Is this the politics that George Bush wants the Iraqis to embrace?
Attempts to undermine the commander-in-chief during time of war amounts to treason. I know we have an opportunity to express our points of view, but there's a time when we're engaged in a combat situation that carping criticism against the commander-in-chief just doesn't cut it.
Okay, it doesn't cut it. Thanks ever so much, Pat Buddy. But again, like I said, it's the little things that Dear Leader says that you have to chew on. The rejectionists will embrace politics. The rejectionists are largely people who, if you take their definition, they're largely people who don't like the American occupation. Yes, dear.
I thought they were to embrace freedom, not politics.
The nice thought, too. No, what they want is politics. They don't want freedom, they want politics. Good thought, Agnes. But yeah, that was from last week, Pat Robertson.
We've won the war already.
Really?
And for the Democrats to say we can't win it, what kind of a statement is that?
Did I miss the parade? Did I miss the rah-rah and the brass bands and everything from our victory celebration? That crazy, greedy, old, hateful fool thinks we've won this war. And another dead body will come home tomorrow, and another dead body will come home the day after that, and somewhere down the line it'll be 10 dead bodies, or 20, or 30, or 50 at a shot.
Wasn't it not too long ago that we played a cut from Bush that said it could not be won?
Oh, that was Friday, yeah.
I thought my memory served me correctly.
Yeah, we can't win the war on terror. He has said it. And Howard, I don't know, maybe this is another one of those problems we have as Democrats, where we are frequently accused of trying to examine every blessed nuance while the Republicans are out there making bumper stickers, you know, these colors don't ruin, you know, that kind of thing.
You said to me a second ago, one of the things you'll lay out in your vision for the next 4 years is how to go about winning the war on terror. That phrase strikes me a little bit. Do you really think we can win this war on terror, for example, in the next 4 years?
I have never said we can win it in 4 years.
No, I'm just saying, can we win it? Do you see that?
I don't think you can win it.
Of course not. I don't think you can win it. Now, there's a bumper sticker for you. But it's a matter of
attempts
nuance.
Attempts to undermine the commander-in-chief during time of war amounts to treason. I know we have an opportunity to express our points of view, but there's a time when we're engaged in a combat situation that carping criticism against the commander-in-chief just doesn't cut it.
Now, we're talking a little bit about Tukey Williams tonight. Stanley Tukey Williams. And you need to understand, I mentioned earlier, it's some sort of cornpone redneck code that the president uses. The rest of them use code, too. And one of those code words is treason, sweetheart. Treason. Check out your Constitution. Treason is punishable by death. So, when you hear that evil old SOB, Pat Robertson, say that you and me, who oppose this war, should be charged with treason, what Pat Robertson is saying is that he wants the Democratic Party executed. Executed. Just like Saddam executed his political opponents. Pat Robertson, screw Hugo Chavez. Bring it closer to home. Pat Robertson has said that he wants you and me and anybody who opposes dear leader's little war on pick a noun killed. You get it?
I'm a God warrior!
Yeah, these God warriors want us dead. You know, treason is thrown around, you know, well, you know, they're treasonous. You know, and the man Coulter, Adam's apple Annie Coulter, penned an entire book named Treason. And when you throw treason around, you need to understand they are talking about a political holocaust in this country. There is no middle ground. The only thing in the middle of the road are yellow stripes and dead possums. There is no middle ground. There is no olive branch to extend. They don't want an olive branch. They don't want peace with us. They don't want common cause with us. They don't want accord with us. There are no moderates in America anymore. There is right and there is left. And the right wants you dead.
Same people that would vote to cut defense $177 billion, the same ones that would put homos in the military, the same ones that would not fund BRAC, the same
Mr.
ones that would not clear up.
Mr.
No,
Chairman.
I will not. Sit down, you socialist.
That was 1995. And there are still people on our side of the aisle, our side of the political debate, who are still trying to, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. We will pray for the right-wingers. While you're praying, sunshine, they're getting ready to slit your throat. We need to understand this. When Pat Robertson and Michael Reagan and Michael Savage and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, yeah, he hauled out the treason word too, and Anthrax Coulter, they're throwing around treason for a reason. Maybe treason is the reason for the season.
No, dear, it's just basically they can pray all they want, that their God can't hear them.
It's not about prayer, dear. They don't pray. The only thing they worship is the folding green in their pocket. And the only prayers they make are when they stick the little plastic card in the ATM. God's not involved in this. This is pure and simple political war. What did Mao Zedong say? That politics flows from the barrel of a gun? I believe that is what he said. And they believe it too. Think about the U.S. Appeals Court judge Janice Rogers Brown admits she was a Maoist before she became a conservative Republican. Okay? They want us dead. Better sort it out. Because they don't, you know, it's not one of those wait till you see the whites of their eyes kind of thing. They'll, you know, Sammy Alito's been nominated for the United States Supreme Court, and he advocates shooting 15-year-old black kids in the back. And baby, that's how they operate. They will shoot you in the back. They will put the shiv between your ribs in your back. And we're executing what the hell? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards. But will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for sticking around. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. 19 minutes after the hour, here in our secluded broadcast studio in a remote, undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. Special hello to anybody listening for the first time coming in through the portal at herherald.com. Glad to have you around. And the usual shout-out to our good buddies in the Tom Hartman chat room, as well as the folks at Democratic Underground, our pals at Coal River Mountain Watch, who are dealing have been dealing with a massy poisonous sludge spill over the weekend. Sludge, it's good for you. Brought to you by Massey. Yeah, that happened. Information I received suggested that the level of the Coal River was raised some 8 inches. The entire river turned black with massy mine filth. Thanks for the Christmas gift, Don, buddy. What a guy. Now, backing up just a little bit, these people who are so fond of suggesting that you and I, who believe that, you know, you think about things a little bit before you launch a war against a country that has not fired a shot at you, that, you know, we're treasonous. Treason being defined as a capital crime in the Constitution of the United States. If I'm not mistaken, it's the only crime that's defined in the Constitution of the United States. During his speech today, Dear Leader was asked directly by a member of the audience about one of his predilections. Yeah, let's go ahead and hear that. She asked the question. I'm not going to tell you what the question is.
Mr. President, I would like to know why it is that you and others in your administration keep linking 9/11 to the invasion of Iraq when no respected journalist or Middle Eastern expert confirmed that such a link existed.
What she said, I missed the question, sorry. I beg your pardon, I didn't hear you, seriously.
I would like to know why you and others in your administration invoke 9/11 as justification for the invasion of Iraq when no respected journalist or other Middle Eastern experts confirmed that such a link existed.
Oh, I appreciate that. 9/11 changed my look on foreign policy. I mean, it said that oceans no longer protect us, that we can't take threats for granted, that if we see a threat, we've got to deal with it. Doesn't have to be militarily necessarily, but we got to deal with it. We can't just hope for the best anymore. And so the first decision I made, as you know, was to deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan because they were harboring terrorists. This is where the terrorists planned and plotted. And the second decision, which is a very difficult decision for me, by the way.
Oh, good.
And it's one that
as long as it was difficult.
I didn't take lightly, was that...
No.
Saddam Hussein was a threat. He's a declared enemy of the United States. He had used weapons of mass destruction.
That we sold.
The entire world thought he had weapons of mass destruction.
Because
the United Nations had declared, more than 10, I can't remember the exact number of resolutions.
Oh, wait.
That disclose or disarm or face serious consequence. I mean, there was a serious international effort to say to Saddam Hussein, you're a threat. And the 9/11 attacks accentuated that threat as far as I'm concerned. And so we gave Saddam Hussein the chance to disclose or disarm. And he refused. And I made a tough decision. And knowing what I know today, I'd make the decision again. Removing Saddam Hussein makes this world a better place and America a safer country.
Oh, yay. Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil!
I actually got something to do.
Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil!
Wait a minute, Bob. The terrorists didn't come from Iraq. They were in Germany, and they came over here.
Huh?
And they were Saudis.
Well, they were here for years.
They were
God.
Here for years, but they went back and forth from here to Germany. Not from here to Afghanistan. Not from here to Iraq. If you're curious about it, look it up. That's the facts.
Well, we know that.
Evidently.
No.
Our president doesn't.
He knows it too, dear. Hell, the right wing nuts know it. But they've got to cling to this sick, murderous little lie in order to sleep at night? Nah, they don't sleep at night. They're freaking vampires. But first word out of his mouth, September 11th. Now, in all of that hooey, did you hear him answer that woman's question? Now, she stood there sincerely, honestly, forthrightly, and asked him a question. And as a human being, she was entitled to an answer, and he couldn't even treat her like a human being and answer it. Why do you persist in linking 9/11 and Iraq? You know, the easy answer, if you really believe this bourgeois, is to say, we don't do that. Of course, you could pull up hours' worth of evidence in the form of pronouncements by Rummy and Cheney and Condi and Bush and Pearl and Wolfowitz and the whole sick, sadistic gang proving the contrary. But the straight answer, we don't do that. Or the other straight answer is to say, well, we do that because we want to make people understand that it's all the same thing. It's all the war on terror. You could do that. But he couldn't even muster that much respect for this woman, arguably a citizen of the United States, his boss, for God's sakes. He couldn't even muster up that much respect. Why do you continue to link 9/11 and the Iraq War when nobody else will make that link? And what do you get? Saddam was a dangerous man, and 9/11 showed me that the oceans will no longer protect us. You know, the oceans didn't protect us in September of 1812, 1813, 1814, whatever year. The oceans didn't protect us when the British came across the Atlantic Ocean in wooden ships propelled by wind and burned the damn Capitol and the White House. I am so sick of this bumper sticker mentality of the right wing. Oceans no longer protect. Freedom isn't free. My country, right or wrong. My mother, drunk or sober. It makes me absolutely... Oh, God.
But see, the UN did not sanction war on Iraq.
No, hell no, of course they didn't.
And on top of that, it went from weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist to we were going to bring them freedom, to now it's back to terroristic activity?
Terrorist-related program, activity program, sure.
Pick one.
But the point here is that the lies are repeated. It's straight out of 1984, okay? It's just sloganeering, and most of America, equally as in so much of America, I won't say most anymore because still, 60% of America is sick to death of this hateful, awful little man. But there is still some portion of America going to their mega church every time the doors open, attending their little Republican committee meetings, who's keeping America safe. You know, we gave Saddam the choice to disarm or disclose. Damn you, George Bush, you liar. He did disclose. And all dear leader could say was, he's lying about it. Turns out he wasn't. In all of that whole sickening diatribe, not one time did he say weapons of mass destruction. If he never hears that phrase again, it will be too soon for George Bush. We gave him the choice to disarm or to disclose. Well, he was already disarmed, and he did disclose. And, George, you attacked him anyway. And screw Saddam. George Bush didn't attack Saddam. George Bush attacked Ahmed and Abu and Muhammad and Jalal and their children. And it is our mortal shame that we allowed him to do so. This is Head On.
My jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. President Bush has been criticized for living inside of a bubble, only interacting with people who agree with him, and only getting information from a very few trusted sources. And the critics are right. A president, regardless of political party, theoretically represents all Americans, including and sometimes especially those who disagree with him. But Mr. Bush is far from alone. All of us, to a certain extent, live inside of a bubble. Our lives revolve around our work, our families, our friends, or our social groups. Some of us don't concern ourselves with anything outside this bubble, and some would even prefer that everyone and everything that doesn't have to do with them directly would just go away. Now, certainly a regular citizen with no ambitions above and beyond going to work and supporting their families shouldn't be expected to have the same kind of interest in the world as the president. But even so, ignoring the world around us can have dire consequences. Whether we like it or not, our lives are all interconnected in some way. By ignoring everything that goes on outside of our bubbles, or because we're afraid some unknown enemy will take away the things we have, we open up ourselves to be manipulated and robbed by people whose ambitions are greater than our own. Vigilance is a small price to pay to ensure that we remain free. We can still live inside our bubbles, but only if we recognize that we're all part of something much greater. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Anywhere near done with Dear Leader. I'm sorry. Maybe some of you would like for me to get off him once in a while. And I try. I do. We talk about other things. But when this guy stands up for 45 minutes in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Annapolis, Maryland, or Washington, D.C., and just lies for 45 solid minutes, I think it's worth a couple of hours or so of this program. And I apologize if you don't. Now, he took another question that was equally forthright, and I want you to hear how the guy who spent his childhood stuffing M-80s up the butts of frogs and lighting them and throwing them in the air and watching them explode, who spent his adolescence turning coat hangers into brands, heating them white hot and sticking them into the flesh of the junior members of his fraternity. I want you to hear how he answers her question about how many Iraqis are dead.
Since the inception of the Iraq War, I'd like to know the approximate total of Iraqis who have been killed, and by Iraqis, I include civilians, military, police, insurgents, translators.
How many Iraqi citizens have died in this war? I would say 30,000, more or less, have died as a result of the initial incursion and the ongoing violence against Iraqis. We've lost about 2,140 of our own troops in Iraq.
Get that? Again, the mad sucker. Boy, I wish I could use some of the words that Richard Pryor, God rest his soul, used to use. But again, it's in the nuances of what he says. When he is in earnest, he can speak quite well and speak quite earnestly and speak quite articulately and what's the word I'm after?
Eloquent.
No. This is specifically. Speak specifically. Or as some folks I know say, pacifically. And that's what he did here. That's what he did in answering this question. How many Iraqis are dead? He said, well, you know, from the initial incursion and the ongoing violence against the Iraqi people and the terrorist bombings, well, 30,000 more or less. You know, here in West Virginia, when you buy land, you don't get an exact statement of how much land you've bought in your deed. It says at the end, instead, containing 6.27 acres, more or less. And that's okay. You can do, you know, if the creek bank overflows or, you know, and a little bit of dirt gets washed away, maybe you've got a little bit less than what's stated in the deed. So more or less, sure. You don't describe the human beings as more or less. Part of the reason George Bush couldn't say how many we've killed in Iraq was because we've been told all along that the Pentagon doesn't count collateral damage. The Pentagon doesn't count little baby girls with their legs blown off. The Pentagon doesn't count little baby boys with their eyes burned out from white phosphorus. We don't count them because being all brown and stuff, they don't count. But also inherent in this, like I said, he meant what he said. He did not acknowledge, with the exception of mentioning the initial incursion, he did not acknowledge that a single Iraqi has been killed as a result of direct American acts of violence. And you and I both know that that is a damned lie, and in fact is a damnable lie. It's the kind of lie that if you believe in heaven and hell, will send you to hell in short order once you breathe out and don't breathe in again. 30,000 Iraqis, more or less. Yes, dear.
How do you expect the man to know those numbers when they are starting to send our soldiers home as freight?
Well, I know. I know. That's heartrending. And in fact, we might as well address that. Did you know that? Did you hear that? Did you see that anywhere? It's a story that arose in San Diego. An Army veteran mom and an Army veteran dad got one of those nifty little communications that says, "Greetings from the President. Tough luck. Your kid's dead." And then they were told where to go to see about doing something about the corpse. "Well, Bob, that's awfully cold. You should talk that way. Not half as cold as what they're doing to the bodies." You know, we had it in our stupid little heads that even though they wouldn't let us see the bodies coming home to Dover, that this gang of right-wing zealots would at least do the right thing by the corpses. Caskets, honor guards, flags, the slow march of the coffin down the back ramp of the transport aircraft. No, sugar, not even that. Not even that. 30,000 dead Iraqis, more or less, from Iraqi-on-Iraqi violence. But Mr. and Mrs. Veteran, that's unfair. What's their name? Give them a name. Give them the dignity that George Bush won't afford them. John Holly and his wife, Stacy. They had one child. They had one son who joined the Marines. Matthew Holly. He was very good at martial arts and visual art. Matthew was. I know that. Wanna bet Dear Leader doesn't? Wanna bet Rummy doesn't? Wanna bet Cheney doesn't? Wanna bet Condi doesn't? Wanna bet Paul Wolfowitz doesn't? Wanna bet Richard Pearl doesn't? Wanna bet John Bolton doesn't know that Matthew Holly was good at martial arts and visual arts? Well, Mr. and Mrs. Holly did know that. What they didn't know was that their son's body was going to be shipped to the warehouse portion of the San Diego International Airport, packed in a cardboard box and unloaded with a forklift. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our familiarity with military protocol and things of that sort allowed us to kind of put our foot down. "We're not sure other parents have that same knowledge," said Stacy Holly. So she wants to get that information out. Military parents, when your son is killed, he will be shipped back home in a cardboard box and unloaded with a forklift. No bugle playing taps. No six members of the armed services in full dress uniform. No flag, no honor guard, no 21-gun salute. The forklift operator will go and get his cardboard box, and then he'll take the forklift and turn it around and go get the next cardboard box. Mr. and Mrs. Holly were not willing to sit still for that. She felt like the nation, or at least the administration, owed their son the common decency of what he you know, when you're in the military, you think, well, you know, they kill me, at least get the honor guard. And this wretched, corrupt, insane administration can't even do that. But they made some calls. Guess who helped their son get the honor guard that he deserved? Senator Barbara Boxer. Arnold was no help. He was busy deciding whether or not to kill Tukey Williams. The Bush administration was no help. We'll ship your kid's dead corpse home in whatever we see fit to ship it in, and you'll damned well like it, or we'll have Bill O'Reilly say that you're being treasonous, or Pat Robertson, it's treason. Can you imagine the day that Matthew Holly was born? The love, perhaps even tears in the eyes of John and Stacy Holly. Both of them veterans. Loving and nurturing and caring about young Matthew until such time that, you know, they were veterans. They preached patriotism, love of country, duty. So he did what was natural to him growing up in that family. He joined the Marine Corps. And his life was wasted in Iraq. And his body was stuffed in a cardboard box and sent home and unloaded with a forklift. No taps. The only music that was playing when Matthew Holly's body was unloaded was the hum and squeal of tires on a slick concrete floor and the as the forks of the forklift slid under the cardboard box that a veteran was stuffed into by the Bush administration and shipped the hell home. I suppose there's an odd chance that some Bush voters might be listening. Hey, Bush voters, thanks. Thanks for electing a man whose administration is so corrupt, so inept, and so negligent that they can't even see to it that a soldier's coffin is draped in an American flag instead of stuffed in a cardboard box and unloaded with a forklift. Thanks, patriots.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org.
A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards. But will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Early light, but much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise. Well, you go out on Saturday evenings to the driving on Route 41, and it was there that I first suspected that she was doing what she'd already...
You know, there's a reason, and it's a practical reason, beyond the honor that is involved with an honor guard. That you walk the casket slowly, and you walk it with a full complement of human beings carrying it. Because bodies that have been killed in war don't hold up too well. And if you drop the casket, bad things happen. Just so you'll understand, this wasn't some C-130 cargo plane pulling into San Diego. The bodies of our honored dead are being shipped on commercial airliners down there with the suitcases and the puppy dogs and the crying kittens. And no honor guard sits with the body. And you go to the freight terminal to get your baby. You know, when the first flap was raised about the fact that we were not allowed to see the dead coming home, we were assured, by God, we were assured by the Bush administration that all due military honors were being accorded them. Why the hell am I surprised? Why was I surprised and horrified by this latest revelation? A president who is himself a coward and who cowardly ran from duty cannot conceive of the passion and commitment of a soldier to his fellow and cannot conceive of the honor that fellow soldiers feel their fallen brethren and sisters are entitled to. It is literally inconceivable to such a coward. But we were told, oh, all due military honor. Oh, yeah, absolute, sure thing. Hey, Joe, stick him in the belly of that 707. Yeah, right. Yeah, next to the steamer trunk. That sniffle was my darling wife. Sometimes I wonder, this show is breaking her heart. Just because of what we have to get out there, because the evening news won't. Has it? Is it? Did it run tonight? I was back here working. I admit, I could be completely wrong. But as far as I know, this story ran once in the evening news of the local news broadcast in San Diego and probably made the noon news the next day. News cycle was over, and it's time to go on to the circus story. Newsflash. Circus animals get better treatment than our honored dead do coming home under the Bush administration. Isn't that a novel thought? The pythons get better treatment in a traveling circus than a dead soldier does, a dead human being, mommy and daddy's precious little boy gets coming home. The Holly family had to raise hell and enlist the aid of their Democratic liberal senator, Barbara Boxer, just to get their son, Matthew, an honor guard. Why has it all got to be Bush's fault? Damn it, he ran for the job. He is responsible for everything. I learned that listening to Republicans during the Clinton administration. And I also paid attention to that little sign that Harry Truman used to have. You know, the one that said the buck stops here? Imagine it. Imagine it. Your world is shattered. Your only son is dead. Blown up. And you know, for all I know, the Hollies think it's a just war. I'll cut them some slack. But you know what? Whether you think it's a just war or an unjust war, what you do with the fallen matters. I remember as a child the field trip that we would take every spring in junior high and early high school, a field trip to the battlefield at Shiloh. And row upon row of elegantly carved markers neatly placed for all of the fallen Union soldiers. And over on a far corner of a battlefield, one simple monument raised up that said, "In this trench lie all the Confederate dead." And that moved me. The fallen are entitled to at least the decent treatment of their bodies. And Matthew Holly came home in the belly of a commercial airliner that was unloaded with the Barca loungers and the new stereos and the TVs and the kitty cats and the dogs at the freight warehouse and hauled off the plane in a cardboard box by a forklift. By a forklift. Anybody who thinks that little of a fallen soldier, any government that feels that little devotion to the fallen, what did Abraham Lincoln say? The last full measure of devotion. Any government that can treat the fallen like that is not entitled to the good regard of civilized nations. At least that's what I think. And you know who I am. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you.
theater with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating, just very devastating, and the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
for my pallbearers. I want three pretty women to sing our song. And I want a jazz band on my hearse wagon.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, 1 hour to go. Let's make it count. You know the drill. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And straight to the phones. What do you say? Ben's with us. Hey, Ben, you're Head On.
Hey there, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, a lot of what's going on, a lot of what we're seeing here is because the military has eaten its seed corn.
That's right.
Okay. We have sent, we have gone into the battle in Iraq as though we were in a battle for our lives. We have thrown the cooks into the front line. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, the
battle of the bulge stuff.
The cooks, the buglers, the administrative guys, the warehouse workers, everything, everybody who could conceivably be here to, you know, be pulled off of whatever duty they are doing and put on an honor guard, every one of those guys has been deployed to Iraq.
God, that's a horrifying thought.
Okay, they're either there, they're recuperating from having been there, or they are training to go there. There is not a single... This is why we are so deeply into the National Guard and the Ready Reserve.
Yep.
This is why we are so deeply into contracting for what used to be done by the Quartermaster's Corps.
That's exactly it. And
the Quartermaster's Corps is no more, essentially, except for a command cadre. They're virtually all it's virtually all contracted out.
Yeah, it's been outsourced. Well, even the buglers, as you mentioned, and you know we saw this in the response to Katrina, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And
we
now
did. There was nobody left to go.
And now front page news in L.A. is that the city's going to burn when Tukey Williams is executed.
Oh God, I hope not.
Where I do too.
But yeah, they've got no National Guard to call up.
No.
You know, and what's worse, okay, understand this. A lot of the police services are short-staffed as a result of the Iraq War.
That's absolutely right.
Because so many cops are National Guardsmen and reservists.
This is, how much more, Ben, how much more does it take before the nation sees what these monsters have done to us?
Do you realize that right now that a concerted effort on the part of the Federal Republic of Mexico could probably take the southern states from us and we could do nothing about it except nuke them?
Oh, my God. No.
I'm quite serious that they have got, that Mexico on our southern border has a million five in uniform.
Yeah, they have a larger standing army than we have.
Yes, they have 1.5 million in uniform. They are moderately well trained. They can be expected to not break under fire for the most part. Their troops are good. And if all we have opposing them are aging reserve commission officers, policemen, and firemen, which is really all we'd have unless we wanted to use NORAD SAC. Okay?
Yeah.
All right? And quite honestly, they've got enough anti-aircraft equipment of good or in good order and of recent vintage that they could give us grief there too.
Well, we sold it to them, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
and that's not to say that there is an imminent threat from Mexico. There isn't.
No. But I'm saying that we are defenseless now. We are defenseless now. The Canadians could take Maine, and we couldn't do a damn thing about it. Okay. That is how absolutely naked we are right now. Militarily, we are the weakest we have been since probably probably the late 1920s.
Yeah, when we had almost completely stood down.
Right. Yeah, back when Billy Mitchell was arguing that we really needed to keep flying.
Yeah.
You know, that is about how weak we are domestically. We have a military overseas that, you know, where they've worn out all of our equipment. You know, we spent the better part of latter 80s and throughout the 90s building up, you know, about 15 units a year. That the M1A1 Abrams inventory.
Well, yeah, well, and other mechanized inventory as well. You'll never get a wing nut or a freeper or whatever to acknowledge it. But Ben, the fact of the matter is, military spending increased under Bill Clinton.
Oh, it sure as hell did, and we were probably more involved militarily in other countries' business under Bill Clinton than we had been quite some time, except for the Gulf War.
So when. How badly do you have to screw something up?
Do you know how they do buglers now when you do get an honor guard at a funeral?
Isn't it like on an MP3 player, isn't it?
It's an electronic bugle.
Yeah, it's a robot bugler for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, he holds it up to his lips and pushes the button and it plays.
Oh God.
Okay.
Oh God. You know, do you remember, I mentioned this the other night, Ben, do you remember when Dear Dipstick was on the campaign trail in 2000, and he made that famous statement about how if it was necessary, two or three divisions would have to report, not ready for duty, sir. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
And what does that say for now?
We are in a world of hurt. The Chinese can take Taiwan anytime they want, and unless we are willing to go to World War III with them, we can't do a thing. The North Koreans, they could attack Seoul. And, you know, we have some troops there, and we'd give them a hard time, but we couldn't reinforce them. They'd have to be fighting a falling back action because the North has mass wave attacks available to it.
Well, how many millions do they have under arms?
Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome. You're born. You're in the army.
Yeah.
And Seoul is very, very, very close. What is it? The 38th parallel?
Yep.
Yeah. Seoul is, you know, throw a rock across the 38th parallel and you're in Seoul. So.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's to the point where if the wind is right, they can actually hear that wall of bullhorns that Kim has facing the DMZ so he can shout propaganda across it. You can actually hear that in Seoul if the wind is right.
And again, you know, what do you think? I mean, let's just sit here and play a little quick little game of Risk, Ben. If Eric Shinseki, I mean, we know the war was wrong.
Right.
But if Eric Shinseki had been listened to, when he said, if you want to do this, it's going to take you a half a million men to take it and hold it. Would we be out of there by now?
No, but we wouldn't be having people dying every day. No, we wouldn't be out of there now because our interest is to remain. We would have a puppet government securely in place with all of the domestic petty terrorism they need to keep the population in line. And we'd be pumping oil out of there. And at the very least, we would not be losing human capital on a daily basis.
Well, this Agnes didn't want me to forget about this story. And we read it right after we went off the air on Friday. And I wanted to scream. The idea that our soldiers are coming home in cardboard boxes.
Cardboard boxes.
And they are, and most people, you know, like I said, we got all the hoo-ha about them coming into Dover Air Force Base on C-130s, and that much is true.
Yep.
But what we have not been told until this point is that the transshipment point out of Dover is via commercial airliner to wherever they go.
Now, here is something I've been considering. There's no reason for there not to be an honor guard, and here's why. Every place in this country that I'm aware of has a VFW post. Every officer who was ever an officer in the armed forces has a reserve commission and has it for life. So if Bush had just had the decency to think of getting hold of the VFW, and saying, guys, we need people for honor guards.
But when he ran away from the military, he ran away from it with the firm conviction that he was going to forget that he was ever even vaguely involved. He hates them.
I know. But, I mean, that's all we'd need to do. We could have honor guards tomorrow for every single soldier coming back if we just involved the VFW, you know, and it would be done.
And I think about those. I mean, obviously there have been some honor guards because I think about, the Reverend Fred Phelps.
Yep.
That sick bastard sends his protesters to tell grieving families that God killed their child because America doesn't hate gay people enough. We're letting him win.
Yes.
When we ship the bodies back in cardboard boxes, that is a tacit admission that he is correct, isn't it? To some degree or another.
He would see it that way.
I don't know, Ben. I gotta think that some administration, for God's sakes, the Nixon administration handled things with more aplomb than these clowns.
Well, understand that the Nixon administration had at its disposal the draft.
Sure.
And they used it, and there was no dearth of people to fight that war. You know, the problem is, although I think, I'm sure, that Rumsfeld would dearly love to start the draft tomorrow.
No, I don't doubt it.
Despite his rhetoric that the draft is useless and draftees are useless. Remember that whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
He'd dearly love to start the draft tomorrow, but the Republican Party, it would be political suicide for the Republicans.
Yeah, because then we'd get to say, okay, fine, when did Jenna and Barb go?
Uh-huh.
And I've gotten to the point, I'm so frustrated, I really, really want them in the military. And that's really cruel of me, I know.
Oh, I can think of something very nasty to say that I can't say on the air. I won't.
Well, that's what these stories do to you, Ben.
Yeah.
All the words that you don't want Mama to know, you know.
Yep.
All right, thanks so much, Ben.
Take care.
Later.
Bye.
It is the function of a broken military, isn't it? Yes, dear. No, on. You gotta, make the red light turn off. There you go.
I knew that I was doing that, dear. I'm not going to approach this from a political view. I'm going to approach this as a mother. Now, I know that there are mothers and fathers listening, and I want you to think back to the day your child was born. All the hopes and the dreams that you had for them. All the things that you tried to give them to make them better people. I was brought up here in West Virginia, born and raised. I was taught not to start a fight, but to finish one. When you see your child brought home in a box that you are supposed to come and pick up, and you find them on a forklift being dropped off, how mad are you that your government has so little respect for your child that they sent to do their duty, the job that they enlisted to do? Do you expect so little from your government that you would give them a pass on that? Think of the hours you laid in childbirth, the 9 months you carried them, the illnesses that you brought them through. Think about that. Think about that on election day. This isn't about parties. This isn't about politics. This is about your children and your families. And your decisions are what's going to be the outcome for your children and their children. What do you want out of your life?
You know, I just thought of something, dear. Do you remember when they told us that they had changed the name from body bag to transfer tube? The SOBs even lied about that. They even lied about that. We don't even get transfer tubes. We get cardboard boxes.
Well, I don't know how many parents out there have ever thought about it, but I certainly have, and I certainly don't want to outlive my children. I don't want to see their passing.
No parent does.
I've seen the passing of two of my children, and that was enough to destroy me. I certainly can't imagine raising one to 22 or 23 years old and realize that what they died for, they may have believed in, but yet the person that they died for can't remember their name.
Won't go to their funeral.
Won't go to their funeral. Can't send them home with some dignity and respect. And that just burns me up.
I understand, dear. I do understand. So I think we both need to cool off a little bit. We'll go back to the happy stuff in the Bush speech. Let's take a break. I got to get Agnes a Kleenex. This is Head On.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards. But will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Every day there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and a poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, a fire on the earth.
We're back. Time to tell the truth. About 25 and a half minutes past the hour. I realize it's probably different if you're listening on the stream. There's a little bit of a delay there. Well, you know, it's the dirty word delay. All this stuff we had to figure out. See, I'm telling people how the tricks are done. Kind of like Penn and Teller. No, not in the same league.
I was not saying dirty words.
No, I was talking about, no, I mean, that's what it's, the delay is there for the dirty words. That's why it's, you know, I say it's half past the hour and it's whatever, too complicated. The phone numbers, of course, 877-443-2366, alternatively 304-658-3333 if you want to jump into the fray. Bruce is with us. Hey, Bruce, you're head on. Honey, if you'll unread the red light. It's also complicated, Bruce. Sorry.
Agnes
has issues.
Okay. So am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, great. Listen, you know, I just wanted to comment a little bit on the last segment. Listening to Agnes talk, and I mean, I have children myself, but, you know, I work with guys in my normal, everyday 40-hour work week world that are homeless veterans. And these guys who have served in our military and have come back, you know, face just a, you know, I mean, it's like they're discarded. It's like they're damaged goods.
Sure.
You know?
And forgotten and cast aside.
You know, so it is not any surprise to me that, you know, the story that you're talking about with the honorable soldier who had given his life for his country was treated that way, because the ones who are coming back alive are being treated the same way, Bob.
Yeah, or worse.
You know?
It's all a function of the same psychosis, Bruce. You know, the same people that don't give a damn about the wounded ones care even less about the dead ones, because they can never play toy soldier with them again.
Yeah.
Are you seeing an upswing among the veterans that you do deal with in your day to day?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, not only that, but, you know, let's put it this way. The guys that I work with, often there's about a 5-year lag from conflict to where they get to the point where they're in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And usually that's the tail end of a lot of, you know, PTSD related stuff, where they go to work and they, you know, they blow up at the boss, or, you know, substance abuse issues, things of that nature that come as a result of dealing with the horrors of having to go to war. Okay.
Yeah.
And especially in a conflict like we're seeing in Iraq, where there's no, I mean, it's, again, it's there's no, I mean, you know, they say, they you know, that they're, you know, fighting insurgents. But what does an insurgent look like? I mean, is there a special uniform?
There's no uniform. That's precisely, that's why this is Vietnam all over again.
You know,
we don't even know who we're fighting.
Exactly. So they're going out there every day, and they're living in a heightened state of awareness at all times. You know, and coming back from that kind of situation after having been there for a year, you know, I'm not a veteran myself, you know, so I can't even begin to imagine the kind of stress, you know, that they've been under. But the guys that I work with, a lot of them have come from, you know, come through Vietnam. I had a couple guys I worked with who come through Gulf War #1. And, you know, just,
you know, it just truly amazes me, you know. But I did want to shoot out a website to you.
Yeah, please.
VAWatchdog.org.
Okay.
Is a fantastic site for VA resources, and they keep and they live up to their name as far as keeping an eye on the VA and what they're doing. The latest thing has been that the VA wants to reclassify what PTSD is so that they can deny benefits to perhaps even thousands of veterans.
What, no longer a mental illness or?
Well, I think they want to narrow down the diagnosis so that it's not, you know, as wide, you know. I mean,
so that
it's about exclusion, excluding men from benefits or vets from benefits.
Isn't that, wouldn't that sort of entail a rewrite of the DSM-4, Bruce?
I think so.
Because if you've got PTSD, I mean, the only way to do that would be, and I understand how the thinking goes, it's one of those things where, well, you know, we've got evidence that he lost his temper at his next-door neighbor one time, so therefore this can't be attributed to the war, right?
Exactly. You know.
And it's because we've given away the treasury. Everything we have has been given away to the top 5% of the top 1% of the country. Our treasury, our tax structure, our jobs have all been done away with to benefit those people, and now we find out that, I mean, this is a tax cut issue, isn't it?
You know, again, it's yeah, absolutely, but it's also about privatization, I think.
Well, sure. I mean, didn't they go through on the BRAC story a few months back? Didn't they also finally decide that they were in fact going to close Walter Reed?
Yeah.
So you're going to put those guys
where?
Well, I mean, but we know where, don't we?
Exactly.
Healthcare Corporation of America.
Well, we have
Bill Frist.
You know, and I don't want to hold up too much, you know, because I know you probably got people waiting to get on. But, you know, as far as with the homeless population, it is growing and growing and growing.
And I gotta
tell you, man, it breaks my heart. Now, I'm a guy who was homeless at one time in my life. And so I can relate to the people who are there. And we are seeing more and more families and more, you know, single mothers with children who cannot make it work. They just can't make it work.
Oh, yeah. God.
And that's the tragedy. Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
For God's sakes, if we're not doing this, if you're not doing this on the Fourth Estate, Bruce, if I'm not doing this here, you know, maybe these stories will make it to Air America or Ed Schultz or whatever, but it's not going to make it to NBC and CBS and the rest of the alphabet soup.
No.
Because there's some missing girl on some island somewhere for Rita Cosby, you know, Bullwinkle's baby sister, to prattle on about for hours on end.
And I hear she gets to be a witness tonight for Tookie Williams' execution.
Oh, please.
So she'll have
fun. Oh, no.
But you know, Bob, listen, you have a great show, man, and you know, you're speaking truth to power, man, and that means a lot. So.
Well, we try. I mean, it's sometimes hard to tell, Bruce. I mean, this is a very small room with a lot of equipment in it, and you know, it's not like doing stage work where you can kind of peek out. It would be really unprofessional and peek out over the floodlights and see the audience. You don't know, but I appreciate your support. And you guys do an equally wonderful job with what you do at Fourth Estate.
We definitely appreciate it.
Well, you have yourself a wonderful evening to the extent possible. Sometimes I wonder that I'm just like this nightly bummer, and I really don't mean to be. I can't wait till, like, America is America again, and I get to do fun stuff.
Like dance around the room and go, wow, you know, the unemployment rate's down to
1%. Yeah, and another night of good news.
Yeah.
Well, maybe someday.
Maybe someday. All right, man.
Thanks, Bruce.
Have a great night.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. And I'm going to keep rolling on the phones, but just one thing I want you to hear before we do. You know, we talked. You heard Agnes, and I think she was pretty heartfelt in what she said. There is a phrase that's used by Dear Leader in this statement. I want to see if you pick it up, because in light of this story, it's just a little too much to handle.
No, I know some fear the possibility that Iraq could break apart and fall into a civil war. I don't believe these fears are justified. They're not justified so long as we do not abandon the Iraqi people in their hour of need.
The Iraqi people in their hour of need.
Jerk off.
Don't make me use that button, Agnes. I can use it on you, too. But, you know, it's that other hateful word that we despise so much on this program. He doesn't offer any facts. He says, you know, some people are afraid that Iraq is going to break apart into a civil war. I don't believe that. You want to reassure a worried nation, you say, I know that won't happen. He doesn't know it, though. He knows he is in the soup. But he still believes it won't happen, because as long as maybe folks like young Matthew out there are coming home in the cardboard boxes, he can wave the flag, although he can't get one out to the coffin. You know, you understand it. But he believes that, you know, the Iraqis are going to be okay in their hour of need. Oh, God. Let's go to the phones. Gary's with us. Hey, Gary, you're head on. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
It's been better, been worse.
I've seen that disgraceful story there on TV.
It did make it?
Pardon me?
It did make it made it to the national level?
It was on CNN. You're talking about the cardboard box?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was on CNN.
Well, thank God it got a little bit of airplay. Somebody needs to hear about it.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it makes me wonder why anybody would ever want to go join the military when you see what they're going to do to you, how they're going to treat you. And, it just reminds me of, and I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but just like a man that would use a woman, and as soon as he's done with her, he just throws her out the door. You know?
That is an appropriate analogy.
Just, I got what I want. The heck with you. Get out of my face.
Right. Okay, you're done. Get back to the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just disgraceful the way they would do these soldiers like that. And, of course, we know that this isn't the first time. I mean, they've been doing this for years. Look at the way they treated all the people that were exposed to Agent Orange, for example.
Well, sure, and look how they're going to treat. You know, Bruce said in the last phone call that there's about a 5-year turnaround time before the real horror starts setting in. So we're not going to know the true measure of the damage that we have done to our fighting men and women until approximately 5 years after the last soldier leaves Iraq.
Well, you know, if we can't treat our veterans decently, then what kind of country are we?
Precisely my point. Precisely my point. And the answer to your question is one that none of us wants to give voice to. Because
I tell you what, they'll never have me in the military because I'm far too old for it. But I'll tell you what, if I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I think I would do about anything not to go. I mean, I would even if I believed in the war. Just knowing how they're going to treat you, you know, if something happens to you.
Well, here's the measure maybe of that, Gary. We have a family friend who was over there for an extended tour, and he came home on leave Christmas before last, I think it was. And my young son, you know, he's a little boy, you know, and you know how little boys are.
Yeah.
And he said something to our friend, and he replied to him, "Boy, don't you ever let me hear you say ever again that you're going to join the United States military. If you do, I'll whip your ass." And that is a veteran of the Iraq War talking.
Well, you know, I'm a very, very conservative person. I believe in limited government, and this I believe just supports my argument because this is what government does. I mean,
Gary, I'm gonna take issue with you. I'm going to take issue with you. This isn't just generically what government does. This is what government does when it gets into the wrong hands. This is what happens. I mean, it wasn't a secret. These guys said that they wanted to minimize the federal government until they could drown it in a bathtub. I know you believe in limited government, but I don't think you want to limit it that much. I mean, you still believe in the Constitution, right?
Oh, yeah, I still believe in the Constitution, of course. That's the bedrock of my political beliefs.
These guys want to take apart every single structure that has been put in place over the last 200-plus years.
Well, they want to totally corporatize it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what corporatism is.
Yeah, what fascism is, what it all boils down to in the bottom line.
And in fascism, you know, you pay attention to the things in government. That you know, it's cafeteria style government. Well, we like the military, so we're going. But you know, we can't even say that about these guys. You know, they like building things that go boom, but they don't give a damn about the people who pull the lanyards and drive the trucks and the tanks and fly the planes and whatnot.
Well, that's obvious, you know, and you know what gets me? How can these, there's some things Republicans do, and I call myself conservative, but not a Republican. They're so unbelievably stupid, you wonder what in the world are they thinking about. This is one of them. I mean, what bean counter in what office come up with these ideas to ship the bodies of our soldiers back like that? Don't they realize the repercussions of this once it gets known? To go off on a little side shoot here just a little bit, it's just like the Republican disdain for the minimum wage.
Yeah.
What in the world do they gain by being against a decent living minimum wage? They gain nothing.
Well, no, they gain they gain in the short run. You know, it's the grasshopper and the ant, Gary.
Well, yeah, in the very, very short run, maybe they gain. Maybe some guy saves a few bucks on payroll each week. But in the larger overall sense, you know, something like it is just absolutely stupid.
Well, what does Walmart gain in lowballing its workers when you compare, say, Sam's Club and Costco? Costco outperforms Walmart time and time and time again. They're unionized. They pay wages that are higher than Walmart and Sam's. They keep their employees longer. And yet, if you mention the idea of higher wages to Walmart, they'll scream that they'll have to go out of business. And it's the same thing you get if you talk about raising the minimum wage. Why can't, you know, I got to say it, Gary. We've got a Democratic governor, a Democrat-controlled legislature, and this state has never even thought about passing its own minimum wage?
Yeah.
There's nothing to stop the state of West Virginia from saying that the minimum wage shall be $7.
But, you know, did you see that thing in the paper here a couple of days ago about this WVU president? They're going to give him a $25,000 a year raise. I think he's going to $275,000 a year.
Well, that's what you call having the both front feet in the trough.
Well, you know, all over in corporate America and in government and everything else, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, well, that's what we got to pay to keep qualified and competent people. We need to pay that. But, oh, my God, well, to pay somebody, you know, $6 or $7 an hour, oh, well, we can't do that. It'll destroy the economy.
No, it'll kill the country. I mean, it'll be Chinese atonal music.
Yeah, they're just hogs. They're just pure plain hogs is all they are.
And the thing is, now see, this comes back to your limited government argument. Who is going to rein in the hogs, if not government? Who?
But the problem is, Bob, the hogs are in government.
Well, I know, but what I'm getting at with you though is it's not that nobody's going to take it back. You know, the free market is not going to fix that.
Well, I think who's going to have to take it back? The people of America will have to take it back. For example,
and when they do, they will set up a regulatory scheme within government that checks that checks these excesses.
Well,
that's what I'm getting at.
By telling these people to start these wars, hell no, we ain't going to go. And maybe people are going to start telling the government, no, I mean, I'm just not going to pay you anymore. And on and on and on. It's going to have to be a mass thing is what it's going to have to be. But I just have really lost faith in our political process. I mean, it seems like you vote for somebody and they sound good and they go up there and they're worse than the guy that replaced them.
Well, I understand some of that, Gary. Truly, I do. Where I think maybe our ideas diverge, or not so much that, it's how you fix it. And I don't have two generations to wait.
Well, I'll tell you what I think, Bob, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's going to get fixed in a very violent, bloody way eventually, because I don't think our system can change enough to fix itself. And I hope I'm wrong about that. Believe me, I mean...
if America stays on the track that it's on, I'm sorry to say, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I mean,
but if you can pull Americans out of Walmart and get them away from the television set for a little while, and get them to actually, you know, pay attention to what needs paying attention to, how hard would it be? I mean, this is just an example that I beat on not too long back. How hard would it be to craft a law that says no member of Congress shall accept any form of financial remuneration or gift from any individual or corporation?
Well, when you've only got maybe 2 or 3% of the population is actually engaged, it might be impossible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. If you want to head off the bloody conflagration that you are describing, you know, when you...
I hope I'm wrong about it.
Yeah, well, but you may not be. I mean, when you take, you know, peak oil and you take Ben's description of the broken military and our broken national defense, and you combine that and a few other things, lack of an adequate transportation system... then you're begging for heartbreak.
Well, it's just going to be a total breakdown. It looks to me like on all levels, And, you know, we had a discussion here a while back about what happened over in Russia when their system broke down. And you know what saved those people over there, believe it or not? Because their market economy over there was so rotten, people over there grew gardens. I mean, everybody had a garden because you just couldn't count on being able to go to the store and get a fresh tomato.
Right, and if you had a spare rutabaga, you could sell it for a couple of extra rubles.
Yeah, so over there, when the system fell, they actually were in much better shape to weather that than we would be here if ours fell tomorrow, for example.
Well, it's
where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I absolutely do. So, you know, if you want an ultimate linchpin on all of this, I don't think we can do a damn thing, Gary, until we do something about the until we do something about the electronic voting machines.
Oh my God! That is the most evil thing I could even think of.
Well, I've got a story here in the bottom of the stack that I never got to. Diebold executives were told through a company memo some year or so ago that they were to make zero political contributions. They went ahead and donated to the Republican Party anyway. No big deal.
You know, I'll tell you what, when you do away with the Australian ballot, which is the paper ballot, you can expect nothing but mischief. And I'll tell you what, if we cannot count on our elections to be legitimate, I don't know what reason we have whatsoever to support our government in any way. Because it's not real government. It's a dictatorship imposed upon us by trickery and that's what it is.
Yeah, so until...
That's what it, what we've got right now anyway, because you and I both know the story of the Florida elections, which I'm totally skeptical of until you directed me to the right information sources on it.
Yeah, it was.
I thought you were, you know, hit the crack pipe a little too heavy there.
No, and the same thing goes for Ohio. You know, if you follow up with what was done in Ohio, I don't know what the next target state is, but you can rest assured that the Republican National Committee damn well does.
Well, supposedly Bush is out after this.
Yeah, but they got to get somebody else in because if a Democrat takes power, and listen, I mean, I suppose I sound like an ideologue. Maybe I am, but I don't see any. You know, if a Democrat takes power, or if Democrats take the Congress back, then this whole house of cards built on shifting sands that the Republican National Committee has erected, in conjunction with their corporatist buddies, it runs at least a slight risk of falling apart some. So necessarily,
I answer this to me: if that would happen, what? Looking down the road from that, then what could we expect from that? I mean, I believe this country could go into civil war just on stuff like that.
Gary, it's already underway.
I mean, if they all of a sudden lock up, you know, say the election's over, we get a Democrat president, and all of a sudden George Bush and a bunch of top-level Republicans are locked up, I mean, what's going to happen?
Well, I don't necessarily... No, we won't lock anybody up. We don't have that kind of nerve. We'll just say, you know, if you'll just go your merry way and, you know, Mr. Bush, and go down to Crawford and, you know, go talk to the cows, do whatever it is you do down there.
We'll steal any more elections.
Yeah, we'll leave you alone. And we'll get back. We'll get back to the business of, you know, we had 12 years of Bush and Reagan and humongous deficits, and yet in 8 years of Bill Clinton and some things that I profoundly disagreed with, we did manage to wind up with a surplus for George Bush to squander.
Well, you know what his strategy is, I believe, is he plans on spending so much that the next Democratic president can't spend anything.
Well, that's entirely possible, and there's a story out there I still haven't covered about the cabal of defense contractors, some of whom were involved with this Randy Duke Cunningham, who have set up political action committees that literally take monies that are paid out by you and me as taxpayers for defense contract programs and take that money and directly funnel it into the RNC.
Oh, I believe that. But I tell you what I also believe, Bob. I don't believe it's a one-way street. I believe that it's corrupt on both sides of the aisle.
Well, there is some on my side of the fight, but you know what? It's manifestly more on the other.
Well, I will say, as a conservative, I have been so unbelievably disappointed in George Bush, and I'm not the only one. I mean, it's legion out there, the number of conservatives.
Well, who in heaven's name actually thought that man was a conservative, Gary?
Well,
I mean, tell me, honest to God.
It's that crackpipe crowd, Bob. You know, you talk about him every night. Nobody who was paying attention at all could ever have thought that George Bush was a conservative, because you had his record in Texas to look at for one thing. Pat Buchanan was, you know, singing to the top of his voice about George Bush and what he really, really was, and he basically got run out of town on a rail.
But, Gary, isn't that a sop? Isn't that just a sop? Because you know what? Pat Buchanan voted for George Bush. You know he did.
I don't know about that. I mean,
well, in 2004, he was saying that, in 2004, he said, you know, George Bush is no conservative. This war was terrible. This war is about Israel, blah, 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 blah. And then he said, but holy Moses, John Kerry just sucks.
Well, okay, Bob, now let's not gloss over this point. The positions of most conservatives is, yeah, Bush is horrible, but Kerry is even worse.
And that's simply not true. There is not one policy position you can point to that Kerry held that Bush has not screwed up worse than Kerry could have in his wildest dreams.
Well, you got things like Kerry's previous conduct during the Vietnam War. You've also got...
Which was a non-issue.
Well, we can't say what's a non-issue. That's a personal thing to a voter. Maybe the reason...
It's a non-issue to anybody who's got a head on their shoulders and not a rotten cassava melon. How's that?
Bob, we're going to diverge here. What about Kerry's latest rant about the soldiers over there? I mean, this right here, it's almost like what I was talking about before with the Republicans and minimum wage and this latest little deal here. What kind of mileage does he get out of that by saying things like he said? And Howard Dean does the same thing.
But the thing is, I touched on this a little bit ago, and I ran off and I didn't follow up on it. This is nuanced stuff. My side of the debate is just stone guilty of nuance. And what Howard Dean said was the truth. It was factually based truth, and that is, we cannot win this war. And maybe that's too nuanced for the Kool-Aid and crack pipe crowd, Gary, but we cannot win this war.
Right.
That because by definition, wars, real wars, wars like, say, that Congress declares, end with things like the treaty signings on battleship decks in Tokyo Harbor. They end with Hitler eating a bullet in the bunker.
You know, Eugene McCarthy just died.
Yeah.
And what the Democrat Party needs is somebody like Ed again.
Well, he's out there.
Well, he's not to be found in Howard Dean. He's not to be found in John Kerry. He's not to be found in Barbara Boxer. He's not to be found in Dianne Feinstein. And these are what so many people are identifying the Democratic Party with.
Dennis Kucinich.
Well, I mean, that is certainly a step in the right direction.
All you've got to do is listen to that man. Once, and you will be convinced that he actually has the vision to carry this nation forward and get us out of the mess that we're in.
Okay, then will you agree with me? The Boxer Feinstein wing of the party is dragging it down.
Mm.
I'm a conservative. I mean, this is just an observation.
No, I can't, because I agree with a whole lot of what Howard Dean says. Dianne Feinstein, you know, Barbara Boxer, for God's sakes, was the one who got the honor guard for this poor family in San Diego.
Well, I know she did, but we also have to admit there's a lot of political capital being gained there. I mean,
there's political capital.
Not that I would say that she wouldn't do it anyway. I mean, that's almost a side issue, you know. I'm just saying that listen to what I've got to say.
Yeah.
So many Americans identify the Democratic Party with these individuals, and they view them as being extremists.
But, Gary, I understand, but that is a function of right-wing framing, okay?
Bob, I mean, I don't think so.
They believe that if a working man gets sick, he should be able to go to the doctor without bankrupting his family and taking dinner off the table. That, you know, we have given liberalism, you know, full-bore liberalism, a free hand a couple of times in this country, and those times have been good times. Liberalism did everything decent in the 20th century that was worth doing.
You know, I don't think John F. Kennedy, Harry Truman, or Franklin D. Roosevelt would even recognize the Democratic Party today.
Of course they would.
I don't think they would. I think it's moved way too far. far to the left.
But the only leftward move, it was profound. But in all honesty, Gary, the most arguably, and I don't even see how you call this a leftward move. The only difference that FDR and Truman and Kennedy would see in the Democratic Party today is that all the nasty, hateful, vicious, ugly old unreconstructed Confederate racists that were in our party are gone now.
Bob, there's things I could say, but I don't want to hurt you.
No. But George Wallace is dead. Strom Thurmond left the party, and now he's dead. All of those hateful people,
Bob,
they're gone.
You're stepping in it. You're embarrassing me. Baby.
No. But the point here is how can I put this best? The so-called leftward swing of the Democratic Party is actually more Republican racist code, okay? It lies in the fact that the Democratic Party made a conscious choice in the mid-60s that they were going to be a party of inclusion and a party of America for all Americans and a party that said no individual is any better than the next and everybody's welcome here, including the black people. And that is that's the be-all and end-all of Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of those creeps claims that there's been this violent leftward swing in the Democratic Party. It didn't happen.
I don't think history bears you out on that, because if you look at, for example, the fight for the Voting Rights Act and so on and so forth, it was people like Robert C. Byrd that were leading the fight against it.
Hateful old Southern Democrats. You'll notice I said unreconstructed. You know, I heard Byrd on the floor of the Senate today openly admit, he said he was having a colloquy with Ted Kennedy, and he said, there was a time years ago when I didn't even like you. And he said, but time passes, things change, and I am proud to call you my colleague.
Well, I believe that's legitimate. I mean, do you think that George Wallace changed at the end of his life, or do you think it was just an act?
I want to believe that he changed. But given the way that his son is behaving, I tend to believe that it was a lie, because his son is a conservative Republican out there talking all the right-wing trash. So I'm thinking that there must have been a nudge and a wink somewhere along the way. I'm saying this, son, but don't pay attention to it.
All right, let me ask you this, Bob. Right now we seem to be locked into two ideologies, right and left, in America. I happen to think that both ideologies are wrong. I mean,
you know that that's bogus in the first place.
Well, yeah, I think it is bogus. I mean, do you remember Nader's platform?
Yeah.
I thought the guy had the most beautiful platform. I couldn't wrote it better myself. I mean,
right. And why couldn't he come in and help push my party in that direction?
Why couldn't he come in and push the Republicans in that direction? I mean, that's a $40 question, right there.
He chose not to come into the Democratic fray. He would have been shot if he'd done that in the Republican Party. Citicorp, MBNA, the rest of ExxonMobil, they would never have allowed any of Ralph Nader's platform points to.